This is WHFR, Dearborn.
Snickerdoodle shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many treats? Snickerdoodle shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many treats in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
HFCC's associate degree program in automotive technology includes detailed instruction related to the various systems found on today's vehicles. This program is designed to provide students with a thorough knowledge of the technical aspects of the automobile and to develop a certain level of manual skill in servicing, testing, and diagnosing. Classroom and laboratory classes provide students with the experience and understanding they'll need to qualify in numerous fields of employment associated with the automobile industry. For more information on HFCC's Associate Degree Program in Automotive Technology, contact Instructor Gary Hines at 313-845-6350. That's Instructor Gary Hines at 313-845-6350.
Think you have what it takes? We do. Henry Ford Community College. Visit us online at hfcc.edu.
This is Pat Frisco from the Spirits Rejoice radio program with another thought to consider. The creative artist has always worked outside the box. The truly creative artist has a unique perspective, a unique voice. Their works of art go beyond what a painting is supposed to look like, or a jazz or classical piece is supposed to sound like. As a result, these artists are often overlooked, underpaid, or totally neglected. Just look across the radio dial. But these artists always have a home at WHFR. You can tune into Spirits Rejoice Tuesdays from 6 to 10 p.m. or many of our other fine radio programs here at 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
This is a pre-recorded program, WHFR, Dearborn. In the studios with us today on our Parent Connection program, we have three math coordinators. Actually, I call them math specialists, Dana Addis, Terry Fatel, and Kristen Rosberry. Thank you very much for being in the studios with us today at WHFR Studios at HFCC. And this is a pre-recorded program, I just want our listeners to know, and the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the Henry Ford Community College. So we just need to make sure we get that straight with everybody. So welcome. And today's topic is all about math. And I actually called it Who's Afraid of Mathematics? But our guest felt that a more appropriate title would be There Is No Math Gene. So this is wonderful. Thank you and for being here. And I want us to just start with, when we teach math, are we teaching with equity?
We are, Margaret. We're trying very hard to do that. We use lots of manipulatives, hands-on materials, so that students get that concrete understanding before they go to semi-concrete. We want them to be able to get to abstract. So we're working really hard to build conceptual understanding in our students and giving them problem-solving, critical thinking skills for life. So that's been the focus of math classrooms. Look probably a lot different than they did when we were all children, and that's been the focus in recent years.
Okay, so what would it have looked like years ago? I mean, most of us, as I look around this room, are pretty much closer to the same age. But so, Terry, why don't you let me know?
Back in the day, we focused a lot more on computational skills, and that was a good thing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with computational skills, but I wasn't given any instruction on how to problem solve and do activities involving higher order thinking skills. And that hurt me later on because I needed those very much.
Okay. So would it have been more, we would see in the classroom, the kids had the textbook out, and we're just using the textbook. There wasn't the manipulatives, like you're saying, we have today. And so paperwork, paper and pencil, is that what we're seeing? Did the teachers actually get up and do what they wanted to see the kids do? They did the demonstration. This is what it looks like. This is how we do it. This is the formula. What's happening?
Exactly. Really teacher-centered instruction with a lot of practice. The focus today is more student-centered and getting students not just to practice, because you do still need those basic foundational skills, but beyond the practice to apply and extend them into real-life situations, mathematical modeling. What are they going to need for that workplace later on?
Okay. So let's just talk a little bit about those life skills. What would be the basics for even just learning the life skills for you know, having math skills and understanding?
The basics, the students still need their basic skills.
What are they? I guess what I'm saying for the listener, let's just kind of make a list of what that might be.
With basic skills, I think of their addition and subtraction facts, their multiplication facts, because with those basic facts, the knowledge of that, they can start thinking about numbers in their head and develop some number sense. When you go to the store and something is 35% off, since we had a strong foundation in basic skills and number sense, we can figure that out in our head. When we go to the grocery store or wherever we go, we can estimate how much is going in that cart to make sure we have enough money for it. So I still think we need those basics very much. But with the advent of everything that's going on now in our world, we need to teach the kids more deductive reasoning. We need to teach them how to think. We need to teach them things that will help them in the 21st century. So now they need both sets of skills.
Ah, very good. So even if a child wants to save up for something special or Xbox, God forbid if they save up for college, but, you know, it's this idea that, okay, if I spend my money on these shoes over here, then that's going to be less money for my Xbox, and so they can start to kind of figure in the head. We want the thinking to be in the head first. Is that kind of what we're saying?
Yes, I think we do. I think we do want them to develop that number sense. There will be still paper and pencil.
Okay.
But we want to develop them both. We want them to think in their head and, of course, think on their paper.
Okay. And go ahead.
It's been an often, you know, two sides of that there is so much technology these days, and people viewed calculators as a crutch, that students are using them and not learning those basic facts. But we see the calculator as a formative assessment tool, that they're using it. Yes, they have to have that number sense and that computational fluency, mm-hmm. but along with that, it's a way to check their thinking, the calculator, to formatively assess themselves and say, does this make sense? Is this a reasonable answer when you get into...
Ah, so if it makes sense. That's beautiful, because we even need that kind of skill for reading, regular reading in our language arts. So I like the idea of marrying those two things, the math, the reading, all of that comes together. So assessment. I know parents don't always understand assessment. Can you give us just a little information about assessment and what that might look like or what that might sound like? Dana, do you have anything to say about that? Would you like to add just a couple things about assessment? Okay. So go ahead.
With the assessment nowadays, in previously, the kids got questions on an assessment. Let's say a fourth grade assessment. It might have looked like 3 times 7 equals, and then 4 choices.
Okay.
Or it might have said, 42 divided by 3, okay, and then some choices.
Okay.
That was the assessment of not too many years ago.
All right.
Now we have a new assessment coming that's going to start happening in about 2 or 3 more years, where the kids are given a scenario.
All right.
And they are forced, the way the assessments are written, to analyze each distractor. So the question is written where the kids aren't just answering a knowledge level question. They have to do more of a reasoning kind of a question or a product kind of a question.
So they're not like story problems.
Yeah, they are.
They are the story problems. Well, we used to have story problems. That's kind of how we did math. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, we did. But we often had them at the end of the test, and it was a few. And so you could still do very well on the problems that Terry described.
Yeah.
So there was computation alone in our assessment. And that's, we're talking about summative assessment, which is what comes at the end of learning. And we know that all kids don't learn the same math on the same day.
Right.
So that's where we spoke a little bit earlier about that formative assessment piece, where teachers are making sure throughout the lesson, are you with me? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Okay.
What are you confused about? And really recognizing that every learner is at a different spot, and it's part of our job to understand where kids are when they leave. And assigning homework, because homework is independent practice, assigning that mindfully so that you're giving them what they're able to do at home. You don't ever want to send kids home with work that they're not confident and sure about.
Well, this brings me to this question then, because, as a parent educator, what I find is that, parents are doing kids' homework. I hear this. I know this for a fact. And I often say to kids or parents, if you would please not do homework for kids, especially math homework, because what happens in the assessment that we were talking about a few minutes ago is that teachers get an idea that kids understand the work, though it's been done by a parent, the assessment isn't accurate.
Exactly. And that's why homework is a piece of the formative assessment. But what many of our teachers in Dearborn schools are doing now is, okay, the kids do bring in their homework, the teachers go through it, but then they'll give the kids something called a practice test. In other words, where the kids are on the spot without any parents around.
Yes.
And where they have to produce something, then the teacher can more accurately assess that, okay, their homework looked good, and oh, their practice assessment in class also looked good.
Uh-huh.
So there's the match. But then a red flag can go up if a kid did really well on homework, but then couldn't produce those same results when they had to do a formative assessment in class.
Ah, got it. Go ahead. Yeah.
And that's why we were so excited about this opportunity to talk to parents about how do you help. We're at high schools now. We're all formerly middle school teachers.
Okay.
And many high school parents say, well, how can I help them? I don't understand this math.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not that your parent, you're a guide. You're not there to teach it. You're there to ask questions of them and communicate with them, but listen more than you talk when you're helping them with homework.
Mm-hmm.
Encourage them to stick with it, to be that patient problem solver, not to just give up and say, oh, I'll ask my teacher tomorrow. Are there online resources? Is there an example in the book? Do you have something in your notes? What happened before this, that this was sent home with you from your teacher to help us, solve this problem? It's important for parents to get to know how their child learns best. What are the conditions for that? And, we talk to our parents all the time about having a quiet place to study, the kitchen table. Our learners want to be able to have headphones on and other, because they think they can multitask, but I'm still that old school of I think they need that time at a table with the interaction from parents, even at the middle school and high school level, checking and making sure. And the day that the teacher doesn't give any homework, the kids still need to talk about some of those computational skills that Terry was talking about, to do that practice and make sure that they're ready for the upcoming assessments, whether they be formative or summative.
Oh, that's interesting. Go ahead. You want okay. I was going to say that that whole idea of checking in with them, that's one of the things we talk about with parents. It's like we say, check yourself, or they need to check themselves. Do they have homework? Do they not have homework? And if they do have homework, where do they sit down and do that homework? Where is that quiet place? But there was this question about having headphones on, why they're working. Because some kids, as we look around, we do have some kids that prefer to have, for them, it blocks out the other distractions around them in the house. So if they have that, it helps them focus on math. So would you agree or disagree on allowing that or not allowing that?
I would agree to that. I like noise in the background. Mm. I'm working on many projects for work and school, and oftentimes I have my TV on, and I'm not really watching or listening to the TV, but it's background noise for me. And it calms me. And I can't really tell you what the program was about, but my work was very productive.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good to hear. I wanted to just get back to that question about the equity with boys and girls. You know, there is no math gene. You were saying that earlier to us. And we were saying that earlier in the discussion we were having, before we got on the mics, because our listeners haven't heard this yet. So anyway, what would you say about that? What do we mean by that? Because we do know that, we don't know this, but what we understand and what is believed is that girls have this language art skill. They have more of the reading and the language arts. They're better readers. They somehow know how to do that much better than math, and that the boys have more of the spatial thing going on. And so this is a myth. Is this correct? This is a myth. So let's just dispel this myth and let's get into reality here about this.
Yeah, the achievement gap is shrinking between girls and boys on these standardized high stakes tests. And one thing, when you talk about men and women and, you know, that typical example of you're driving and do we stop to ask for directions?
Oh, yeah.
That is
the
reason why sometimes boys do outperform females, because they, if they're taking that ACT math test, 60 questions and 60 minutes, they see a problem that they don't know how to attack. They skip right over it, the males do, and they go on and they've forgotten about that problem. Well, the girls typically are still thinking about, gosh, I didn't remember that formula, or how come I didn't know how to do number seven? So typically that's how this gap in achievement came to be. But we say, you know, which students get more attention in the classroom? Mm. The most vocal students who are their own advocates, and it's the gamut. It's boys and girls. We need to create students. Your son or daughter needs to be their own advocate in the classroom. When they need clarification from the teacher, they need to be, we love those students who raise their hands and ask for clarification. Now, we need constructive struggling. So the teacher's not always going to jump in and say, okay, this is how you do it. Right. But we need those checks for when they start to get confused and when they feel like there's a breakdown. Often if it is during that direct instruction piece, students that ask you to slow down, students that say, hey, this is where I got confused. And it's really, there's not a stronger feeling that it's males or females, just those advocates. And when one student raises their hand, they're really asking a question for 10 others that had that same misconception.
Right. Yes, go ahead.
And then what I was going to also say about the equity was it's really high stakes nowadays. And I don't mean high stakes just so school districts get good scores in the newspaper. Mm. It's high stakes because kids have got to go to college in this day and age.
Yeah, I agree.
And the more they can learn in school, the better that they can do, they have that better chance in life. They can get some scholarships, et cetera, et cetera. It really translates into future areas of their life. And I think kids nowadays are a lot more sophisticated about those kinds of areas than I was when I was a kid.
Okay.
And today, I think more boys and girls are equally trying. You do get, sometimes there's an issue with girls in middle school where, and it's not a lot of girls, but sometimes they feel like they don't want to appear smart to a boy. But I saw that earlier in my career, not as much in the, you know, these past couple years, because everybody's understanding, I got to go to college. I've got to get that step up in life.
Right, and so it's going to take the individual to really make that happen, and they have to look out for themselves. But you do bring up an interesting point about finding your voice. because we also talk about that in parenting classes. You know, I've mentioned to parents that, you know, if we do the work, then kids won't learn to have a voice. They won't learn to stand up for themselves when they don't understand something. So I agree with you 100%. And so what might be, when would that start? When is that, right in kindergarten we're talking about
this?
It's
in preschool. It's in preschool. And, you know, I tell the story about when my son was in kindergarten, the teacher let me come to help during math centers. And this is a very active classroom where the students are moving. And I was at the measuring station. But before they measured, they had to predict how long what they were measuring, you know, what was the length of that, I think they were piecing pieces of cereal together.
Oh,
so
got
how
it.
How
okay.
much would that measure
yeah.
in centimeters? And what the kids were doing, they had a prediction and then an actual. Even those kindergartners wanted to get their eraser out and go back and make the prediction right.
Oh,
and that's,
wow.
you know, what we know about life, Margaret, is that you're not always right. And sometimes you learn more from the mistake that you made. And so how do we create that culture of kids? Not only they're their own advocate, but they're willing to be wrong and they're willing to put themselves out there, go out on a limb and say, here's what I think it is. And you know, get to the answer a different way.
Right. And it's interesting because even, again, in the parent classes, we talk about it's all perfect. What is. And so that is a perfect time to learn from your mistake. And the mistake is okay. It's perfect, you know, and other people are going to learn from it. Just like you said, you had this question and 10 other kids had the same question, but you were the one that had the voice and had the nerve and took the risk to go ahead and ask about, you know, what it was you didn't understand. Yes.
Dean. Yeah, we do say that teachers and parents both, we do, Christine likes to say, we need to give our students and children the gift of struggle. And that's a life skill that we need. We need to keep persevering through problems. If we rescue our children and our students right away, they don't learn any of those skills. And they think that they're just going to be, they can quit anything that they want and go on. And so giving our children the gift of struggle is important.
Well, I have to tweak it just a little bit because in our parent class, a lot of times parents say they tell their kids, try. Well, try implies struggle, and struggle has a stigma attached to it, this failure. It's this failure stigma. So what we say is, what would you do if you didn't know how? You know, where would you start? What's the first step? So it's not about the struggle, but it's like, challenge yourself. This is where you grow. This is where you really get to grow new brain cells and new ideas.
Those dendrites, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's perfect. I really appreciate you adding that. The other thing, let's see, we already talked about the environment really and how to nurture that. Let's do this. I would like you to talk a little bit about each one of you. Just take a few moments here to kind of tell us your background. Tell us a little bit about your love for math. How did it come about? All right, so go ahead. Let's start with you, and then we'll just kind of work our way around. Christine, thanks.
Okay, so I'm Christine Rosbury, and I've been teaching in Dearborn since 1991, and I was a teacher for 15 years before I was a mom. So boy, did my teaching change once I had my own children. And when we talked about this formative and summative assessment, when you test children and you don't give them multiple, as we said, not everybody learns the same things on the same day.
Right, exactly.
And so we try to put the focus on what kids really know and can demonstrate and what they've mastered. But on that same token, I didn't give as many opportunities for retakes and redos for students until I had my own children. And when my daughter was learning to ride a bike, it really clicked for me that the grade isn't when she's scraping her knee and when she's falling down in the grass. The grade is at the end when she can ride all the way around the block. And she's mastered it. It's a skill she's always going to have. Mm-hmm. And that really speaks to what Terry spoke about earlier with those computational skills. We don't want you to have to revert to a calculator for 4 plus 7. We want that to be solid and in there. The same thing with your multiplication tables. We want to find a fun, meaningful way for students to have that computational fluency and start it at a young age so they don't ever get that feeling that I'm not good at math. We want them to all boast about how good they are. So I digressed from telling about myself.
No,
I taught middle school, and in 4 years ago, the Dearborn District, because the state of Michigan has made an Algebra 2 requirement. Every high school senior has to have passed algebra, geometry, and algebra 2 to graduate. So what we talked about earlier, the classroom of yesterday, wasn't like that. Not everybody who didn't think they loved math had to perform and take those higher level courses. When the state made that mandate, they hired people to help implement in our classrooms, to help change instruction so that all students can be successful in math. And that's the name of our title, Math Coordinator. Okay. So I've been doing that at Edsel Ford High School in Dearborn.
Well, it's interesting, too. I just wanted to tag along on that. It's like kids learn to count on their fingers, mm-hmm. and then they go to their toes. So should we really steer away from kids counting on their fingers, or what should we do with that?
You start there because that's the concrete. That's right, them needing to touch for each one, but then you want to get them to semi-concrete where maybe it's on a number line. Then the abstract is where it's that number sense and mental math that people just do because it's riding the bike. They've done it so much, it's there, it's solid. But as we know with riding a bike, it would take different people an amount of time to mm-hmm. learn how to do that.
Right.
That's how it was with math. And in the past, people who couldn't do it right away weren't good, and they shied away from it. And that's how we don't have many people who come to high school or middle school and say, I can't read or I don't like reading.
Right.
We have lots of people who say, I'm not good at math. It's my whole family. That's where the there is no math gene comes up. It's
right.
just the stick with itness, the can-do attitude, staying with the math.
So it's self-talk.
Exactly.
Definitely self-talk. All right. Go ahead. Thank you.
My name is Terry Fatale, and I've been in education for 23 years. And the best part of my whole journey in education was the fact that I was a coach first. And I can't tell you how important that was, because coaches really get that you can't teach a kid to dribble on Monday, free throw on Tuesday, pass the ball on Wednesday, and then the game is on Thursday. So I coached for a number of years before I actually started to teach. So my whole passion for the years I've been in education is treating kids like mathletes and giving them the same respect that we give athletes. So my whole dissertation topic was on formative assessment, because that so much ties into coaching. Kids learn through their sports that it's okay to try things over and over again, because making a mistake is another opportunity to learn. But something happens to them when they get in a math classroom where they think they have to be right the first time. So we've really been changing education in those feelings of, okay, you didn't do it right this time. Why don't we find out where you went wrong, and what can I, the teacher, do to help you? Now, you can do a retake, but it can't be during class. It could be in the morning before school starts. It could be at lunch. In other words, you've made a mistake, but now let's help you grow through it. Maybe you missed an assignment, or maybe you didn't understand something because you were ill. But let's find a way to help you grow, because the ultimate point is we have to have kids learn. So we don't leave athletes in the cold when they don't do something right. We get them all kinds of help.
That's exactly right.
I mean, I can start naming many athletes who had to go to the minors and get beefed up on this or that or whatever. So we can't leave kids that way, and we just have to start treating them like mathletes.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, Dana.
Hi there, my name is Dana Addis, and I am a math coordinator at Dearborn High. I've been with Dearborn Schools since 2000, and I was a middle school teacher prior to being at Dearborn High. And one benefit of being at Stout Middle School prior to the high school was I got the opportunity to follow the students I taught.
Oh,
so
perfect.
I taught these students in middle school, and now they're at Dearborn High, and I'm in the classrooms. And the teacher is asking questions, and they're going through problems and problem solving, and I'm thinking, oh good, I know so and so is going to know this.
Yeah,
because I taught it. Okay. And they aren't raising their hand, they don't know it. So it's very eye-opening for me.
Okay.
To have followed my students and have the opportunity to see
where they're
them in the future.
Yeah, yeah, to see them in the future.
Exactly, exactly. So, now, I know that you do workshops for the teachers as well, mm-hmm. Do training. What's that like, and how's that going? And let's talk a little bit about that. I know you just did one about the geometry is a verb. I think that's really fun. That's exciting. What did the teachers think about that?
It has been very exciting. And by the way, I did forget to mention, I heard Christine mention Edsel Ford, and I heard Dana mention Dearborn, yes, and I didn't mention that I'm at Fortson High School. Anyways, we've started a series of workshops, and we call them Making Geometry a Verb.
Okay.
The three of us totally believe that we have to start concepts and teach them through a hands-on approach and make them very concrete. Then it starts going into a semi-concrete approach and then eventually into abstract.
Okay.
So we've had a lot of success with the teachers going through that. We have out geo boards. We have out manipulatives like patty paper, mirrors that they can use for lines of symmetry.
Uh-huh.
We use the calculators, and there's a lot of geometry programs right on the calculators.
Yeah.
So we've had great success with the teachers then going back to their classrooms and implementing many of these ideas.
Okay.
It's been really nice. Dr. Terry Fatel, that we're sitting next to, came to us, came to Dearborn recently. She taught in Trenton for most of those 23 years. So, and she had done professional development at Wayne County RESA and around the state, really. It was called the Math Institute.
Oh,
so
okay.
Along with Dearborn teachers that come to these Making Geometry a Verb, we do it. Teachers are released from the classroom, the middle school and the high school teachers. Our elementary teachers do a six-star Saturday.
Right, exactly.
So, we've had teachers also from other districts that join us, and that's been nice to have that articulation also, because everyone in Michigan, we're in the same boat.
Right.
To try and help all kids become mathletes and be successful. We want them to be ready for recession-proof health and technology jobs that need a lot of problem-solving and critical thinking skills. So it's been nice to work with teachers. We have a great staff in Dearborn. They're open to how can we flip this classroom and change it from what the classroom was of the past, to not have kids that come to us and say, I'm not good at math, my family's not good, only my dad can help me, only my mom can, you know, to change it to everybody working together.
Right, right. And it's interesting. Dana, you want to add anything to that, to the workshop information?
It has been wonderful, and we have seen the teachers using what we have taught.
Oh, that's what you want. Yeah.
They're emailing us pictures.
Oh.
Look what I was doing. Look at what my students did.
Oh,
they
nice.
Are sending us links to their blog. Check out my blog. We did the pretzel math activity, and we have evidence that they're implementing what we've been teaching. And also, they're even having students get to that higher order where they're writing. And they've been bringing in samples of their students writing in math. And we've been sharing that with the other schools and the other teachers. We're trying to build a community of learners with our teachers.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting because this higher order thinking, it goes across the board. You know, it's not just in math. It's in your reading. It's in your social studies. It's in everything you do. And even as I'm listening to all three of you speak here today, I'm hearing words that are really pertinent to understanding math. You know, and I'm wondering, you know, as we say the old math, the new math, some of this language I don't remember hearing in the old math, okay? So I guess for me, as a parent even too, and I know, and the parents that are listening, what would you suggest they do to kind of hone in and strengthen their own skills and understanding kind of the math that we are doing today?
Well, one thing I would like to say, I'd like to give you my preventive dentistry story here.
Okay.
Because oftentimes parents don't know things, and me included. When my children were going through physics, I couldn't help them in physics. So you have to reach out and get help, whether it's through the school tutoring program or whatever. But I've always said dentistry has it so far ahead of education because they practice preventive dentistry. You go to a dentist every 6 months, whether you need it or not, and you get all checked up.
Correct.
Oftentimes, everybody many parents wait till their child is getting an E, and then once they get an E, then they're trying to get their child help. Where I would always say to a parent, look at your child's papers, the papers that have been graded by the teacher. If you notice there's a lot of things wrong, even if you can't help them physically with that, maybe there's an aunt or an uncle or a cousin in the family that could help. Maybe there's a neighbor that can help. I had to end up getting a tutor for my child because I couldn't find anyone to help with the physics. But if it had been another area, I could have found somebody maybe closer to me that would have done it even for free. But I think that we have to start thinking about practicing preventive educational failure. Mm,
nice.
And think about, what can I do? I'm seeing the teacher mark quite a few things wrong from my child. If I can't help that, I've got to find somebody that can. Maybe I start and go to the school.
Okay.
Maybe I go to the principal and ask, are there any lists of students that can help my child, some honor roll students or National Honor Society students. It doesn't always have to be that a parent has to pay for tutoring.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I think parents, and I love, that was a perfect story, because you know what, Dr. Terry, you know, it just goes to show you, we can't know it all, but we can be proactive, and we can make sure we get away from that helplessness syndrome. You know, there really seems to be this, you know, people just, okay, and we cater to that. So if we can get away from that and empower, and I think we talked about that earlier, empowering our parents, empowering our kids, empowering the teachers, and that is what it sounds like you do in your workshops, quite frankly. So that's just perfect. I don't know what else to say about this. did you want to talk about the PLCs? Is that something, and explain a little bit about the PLCs? Yes.
A PLC is a professional learning community, and in Dearborn, parents have probably noticed that on two Wednesdays a month, our students at all three levels, the high schools, the middle schools, and the elementary, are starting school an hour late, and that's because your teachers are in what we call a PLC, a professional learning community. Okay. Teachers are working together. We're looking at student work together to say, you know, how do we know they got it? If they didn't get it, how are we going to help? What comes in next? What's the intervention? What can we do within the classroom to help every student be successful? And so it's been a nice, such a nice transition for the Dearborn District to put the focus on, we know our teachers are our experts, mm-hmm. and to give them that chance to have professional dialogue with each other to try and fill some of those gaps that maybe our materials, maybe even the curriculum given to us by the state, the gaps that we need to fill for kids to help them with their math misconceptions.
Well, and it's interesting too, because like you talk about professional development, teachers know where their strengths and weaknesses are too. So really it's up to them to be proactive as well and to seek that extra help or knowledge in those areas where they feel like they need the extra help. So it's nice that you're able to provide the workshops to teachers and help them in those arenas, where like math arenas, so they can really hone in on what they're doing so they can better empower their kids. So this has been going on since how long now, the PLCs?
The high school started 3 years ago.
Okay.
Fordson did so in the fall, and then Edsel and Dearborn High joined in the spring. And is this the set now? Has it been two consecutive years that the whole district has been doing it? This is now, yeah, will be the second year. And it has been just awesome. I know there's another survey coming out through the Dearborn Public Schools to make sure that parents feel listened to. Do they prefer half days to these late starts? Because teacher training is a given. We've got to keep, we can't evaluate our teachers on something that we haven't showed them how to do.
Exactly.
And as we said, the world is changing.
Yeah.
There's new technologies. There's, you know, we want every student to be successful. So we have to keep that embedded teacher training. So parents are being asked for their opinion. I personally favor these late starts because it is a chance our staff gets together and we get to work with math teachers, and it's just, we call it Planet Math, because it's, you know, you get in a room with people that think that same way, that want to create a culture of mathletes and want mathletes to be coveted like athletes are, and it's infectious. It's been very positive for us.
Terry.
The other thing I wanted to say about the professional learning communities, I am so proud of our teachers in Dearborn. When we do our professional development, yes, there are times the three of us are the ones delivering many of the lessons.
Okay.
But you cannot believe how many of the teachers are stepping up to the plate and bringing in lessons and activities that they did with their classrooms. They bring in their own student work, and they're presenting it to teachers.
Oh,
it's
goodness.
Now even gone over into when we have our district PD. Teachers are now doing the PD themselves.
Okay.
And it's very exciting to see that, because it can be a little nerve-wracking for, you know, you feel a little awkward at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, they don't feel awkward anymore.
Right.
We keep a list, and the teachers readily sign up and say, oh, I want to show this. Oh, I did this activity. I want to show what my kids did. And we can all learn from what they're doing and what their students are writing about or the activity that they did. We can all learn and grow from it. So we're very proud that our PD is turning into a professional learning community.
So the enthusiasm is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like you're telling me anyway.
Yeah.
And that sounds good. Yeah,
yeah, and
Dana.
Here's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
We even had students present to teachers on our teacher that was on Election Day.
Oh, my gosh.
We even had students.
Isn't that exciting?
Teachers.
That is very exciting. The high school students?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And will we move into the middle schools to have them present as well, you think, at some point?
We'll see.
Coming soon.
Stay tuned, right? And I do have to do a little station ID here. You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 on your FM dial, and this is the Parent Connection show, and you can hear this every well, we air every fourth Monday of every month from 6 to 7, and we are on a podcast, so you can catch us on the WHFR website. So we are in the studio with Dana Addis, Dr. Terry Faitel. Sorry about that the first time around, and Kristen Rosberry. Thank you all so much for being in the studio with us. So let's do this. With computers, you know, being like in every classroom and the technology changing, what do you see in the future for kids really still using the manipulatives? Do you think we're heading more towards everything's going to be on computer, everything that we see, all the manipulation is going to be done on a screen? I mean, would this be good or would this not be good?
I think it could go both ways.
Okay.
There are the hands-on manipulatives that we have, but they also have virtual manipulatives on the computers.
Exactly, right.
They're less money because they're on the computer screen. But then there's something about a kid touching, turning, cutting, flipping. There's still something about that kinestheticness of having that hands-on. So I always say we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes, okay.
We can still do a little bit of both. Now, in a lot of math classrooms, we're using graphing calculators, and Christine mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We're using graphing calculators as a formative assessment machine.
Okay.
The kids can ask what-if questions, and they can also do this on the computer,
mm-hmm.
but they can ask what-if questions, and they can answer it themselves by manipulating the computer or the calculator, and it answers their own question.
Oh, wow.
Like if I'm wondering, what's the difference between an odd and an even rational function?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me try some. And I can put them into my calculator, and then I can see, oh, it all has to do with the, you know, line of symmetry kind of a thing.
Right.
Where before, if a kid wasn't taught that by their teacher, wasn't explicitly taught it, they didn't know. Well, now they can try it on their calculator and see if they can figure it out themselves. And that's what we're trying to teach children to do, is to be independent learners. So I see computers and calculators as fostering some independence, some self-checking through the formative assessment, and just getting in with the century that we're in.
Yeah, Dana.
I just wanted to explain what formative assessment is, because people may not know what we're referring to. And what it is checking for understanding. The student checking for their own understanding, the teacher checking for the student's understanding. And we say formative assessment, and we mean that you just know where you're at. You know whether you got this right or not. And that's what we mean by using the calculator. The students still do the work on paper and pencil, but they are allowed to use the calculator as a formative assessment tool to check their work. So they get immediate feedback from the calculator whether they're on the right track or not.
Okay, so the those little calculators, kids are using them, what, in preschool? Are we? When do they get a hold of those? What?
My children are in second and third grade, and they don't use them often. The teacher will say they're allowed to check their homework. Right. And, you know, that helps with those skills. They're learning those computational skills. That helps them solidify them. But I don't think there's a ton of use in the lower grades. Terry was saying maybe fourth and fifth grade.
Even sixth.
Yeah.
In sixth grade even, yeah. Would you recommend parents make sure kids have a calculator at home then?
Well, my grandson is turning 2 years old, and I'm going to make sure that whether it's an iPad or a computer, when I was a kid, we had a flashcard, okay?
Yeah, right.
So the flashcard came up, and let's say it was 7 times 8. Mm-hmm. And let's say I didn't remember what 7 times 8 was. What I could do is I could turn my flashcard over and go, oh, that's
it. Right.
Well,
right.
Nowadays, the kids can use the calculator, or there's some really cool programs on the computer where if they don't remember what 7 times 8 is, it's just a more technologically fun way instead of turning their flashcard over. So we just have a different version through the computer and the calculators of our old-fashioned flashcards.
Okay. Well, one of the things I wanted to ask, too, was when we were learning math a long time ago, it was kind of like the concepts came one step at a time, but they were building blocks, everything connected. And now I'm wondering, are we kind of randomly teaching from this, you know, we're going to learn the timetables, but then we're going to go into fractions, and now we're going to go, is it connected? If somebody can address that question.
Well, it really is connected, and we're still different than the other content areas in that math is foundational and you're building,
that's
you're scaffolding those stair steps.
Yes.
And it's hard for students who have struggled with the add, subtract, multiply, divide to do those applied problems when you put different concepts together in multi-step. So that's why we keep stressing the basic skills. But along with that, there's a progression. And it's funny that Terry pointed to me to answer this because she really has this unique, robust content knowledge where she sees how to put things together, because the curriculum is a mile wide right now. There's so much that every grade level teacher is being asked to teach their students. And she sees a sneaky way to get multiple concepts into the same lesson.
Oh.
And I had some slippers at home. And the slippers that I have also clean my floors. They have like a mop on the bottom.
Yes, so we use
that as a visual for what Terry does with curriculum, because you're not just walking anymore. You're cleaning the floor while you're walking. And it's the same way with the math curriculum. It's built to these bigger, really more conceptual understanding and putting concepts together.
Okay. Terry, do you want to say any more about that? Where did that idea come from, Terry?
Well, there's that coach. It's from the coaching.
Okay.
Because I called it SLOT, Sustained SLOT. Learning Over time.
Okay.
And I got the idea from when I was coaching my cheerleaders, because I didn't just do one thing with the cheerleaders. Every time we met for a practice session, we did several skills that all together, when it came to our game time, they were ready to rock and roll with our routines. And so when I became a math teacher, I thought, you know, I think that would work really well in math. So by doing sustained learning over time, kids do things over and over again, but you're not just doing one thing over and over again. It just keeps coming back into the curriculum. And I don't mean spiraling.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of spiraling, but it's more when it's an organized spiraling.
Right. Okay.
It's not just a spiraled problem thrown into a section. It's totally organized on building these skills. So when kids take a test, it really builds their self-confidence in everything. When a kid is in the basketball team, since they practice dribbling day in and day out, it's not the only thing they do. It becomes it's automatic, when they go to the game.
Right.
So we're trying to do that with math, so when they get to where they have to produce, everything for them becomes almost automatic.
Okay. So do you think in the classroom we can say math is fun? Is that what's happening today more so than it was years ago?
I definitely think so. I was just at Laurie Middle School today and in a classroom, and there were sixth graders I was in with today, fifth graders, and eighth graders.
They were all different classrooms.
All different
okay,
classes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And
okay.
I cannot tell you the fun day I had. The students were enjoying their learning. They were very active-based. The teacher had great questioning skills. It was just a phenomenal day, and everybody was happy.
Wow.
Everybody was the kids kept saying, I love math. I'm just learning so much. I can't tell you how many kids came up and told me that today.
That's wonderful. Yeah, go ahead.
As a middle school teacher, it was my goal to have more students like math at the end of the year than at the beginning of the year.
And you reached the goal?
I did.
Yay! Congratulations.
I would give an informational card on the first or second day of school, and one thing would say, what's your favorite subject? So I would tally up how many students said math. Then I would ask again at the very end of the year.
Okay.
And I had these students for the whole year. I always had more saying it at the end.
Oh, bravo.
And that was my goal because I want students to like math. I want them to love math. You know, like
yeah,
I
it's
do.
Way different than right. shoving something down right. somebody's throat. You got to know this. You got to have this for the test. And you can't pass this grade until you know this. And yep. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's why we've latched on to the sustained learning over time philosophy. So not kids just learning the material for that test and then they don't feel as confident. They don't know that they have it. Building that self-efficacy with the continual practice until they have it for mastery, like the riding the bike, and it's there and they feel confident about it. And we have kids, as you said, that are having fun and feeling that success that they're good at math.
Okay, now let's just look at this picture for a minute. So the math is making kids, or not making, producing problem solvers, critical thinkers, and so why is that so important for our kids today?
Because here we are in the 21st century, and the math looks a lot different. We have kids who, when they leave, they're going to need more than just the arithmetic skills. Although they're important, they're no longer enough. They're going to need algebra, statistics and probability. Business and industry are demanding this from workers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, along with being good citizens, solving those real-world problems, working with others, explaining their thinking to others, identifying and analyzing trends in data, and being able to use that technology. So we feel it's, you know, so important to have these critical thinkers.
Okay. So because this is Parent Connection, let's just give a few more shout-outs to parents on how they can empower themselves to help empower their kids. What would that look like? I know you, Terry, you were talking about seeking help outside of your own environment. So let's just talk about that one more time. So if all of us just kind of take a few minutes to talk about that, that would be really helpful.
Well, the first thing is there is no math gene.
Okay.
So never, ever, ever say in front of your child that you weren't good at math or your husband wasn't good at math or your brother wasn't good at math. Never, ever say that because then they think there is a math gene and they are feeling like they aren't going to be good at
and
math
either. And they're
going to
be inadequate. Yes.
Right. We don't want that. Okay. And the main thing is to remain positive about math. Always find a way to bring it into real life.
Okay. All right. So even like in a kitchen, perhaps?
Absolutely.
We could start with kids measuring and, you know, knowing ounces, perhaps, and pounds and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
And the other thing I was going to say is, again, just always look at your children's papers. Look them over with your child. They will be graded already from the teacher, you know, marked up. And sit down and just say, gosh, are you having trouble with this? Can I help you with it? It's just taking that interest and being proactive about it. Because quite frankly, I had one daughter who excelled in school and my other daughter did a little struggling. So this lasted many a year. It wasn't like, oh, they're in middle school, I can stop being proactive. Mm-hmm. I had to be proactive with my youngest daughter basically through high school. There wasn't an age limit to it. You know your own child. You know what you have to do. They are your life. Mm-hmm. And so whatever you need to do, and again, I would always start with the teacher. Go to the teacher. Does the teacher have some extra tutoring hours? I know at Fortson High School, you can go into the math hallway. Okay. And I'm sure other subjects too, but I'm mainly in the math hallway.
Okay.
You can go into the math hallway at 6 o'clock to 6:15 in the morning. Every math teacher has their door open, and they are tutoring students. They tutor them at lunchtime. There's tutoring after school. So parents, check with your child's teacher, first of all, and get that kind of help. Get it wherever you can for free. Mm-hmm. And then if you find out, oh, mine is really struggling, I need some extra help, then again, start with a neighbor, an aunt or an uncle. Do something to help them, because those few little marks on your kid's paper, they're not going to go away. Maybe your child's overall grade in math will end up being a C, let's say, okay, or a B minus, whatever. But the gaps that were there are only going to get larger as the child is growing older.
Yes.
So that's what I mean about the proactiveness. The gaps won't go away unless you, the parent, see to it that it doesn't go away.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And so to piggyback on what Terry just said and what Dana said earlier about she followed her students and she got to see the future, mm-hmm, we feel like this is an opportunity for us to talk to, because we're in high school, to talk to the past. And so with young children, to create that family that plays games instead of watching TV,
yeah,
and not just
right,
video games, but board games, and to develop that love for the games that involve critical thinking and math skills, to show them in real life that all the real life applications, the importance of learning math, giving them money for shopping, allowances, estimating the time for your family vacation, how long will it take to get, you know, the trip part of it, the drive, measuring when you buy carpet or wallpaper your room, involving your kids in all these math decisions that you make, developing a schedule when you plan a garden for your family. These are all opportunities for you to show your children that the more math they know, the more opportunity they're going to have in life. Honestly.
Wow, this is just beautiful. I'm just thrilled that parents are listening, that they've got just so much information now on how to really empower themselves and kids to love math. And this is so positive, the story that you just shared about how kids, this, you know, the entrance card and exit card sort of thing, you know, at the end they're like, yeah, I love math a whole lot more. This is what we're looking for. And we want it to kind of go across the board, not just in math, but in all that they do. And that this problem solving and decision making is critical at a very early age, and that getting them away from the games on computer, because that's just a one person thing, and that we really kind of see it as a family opportunity to teach kids about math. So again, I just want to thank you, all three of you. Dana, thank you, and Dr. Terry, thank you, and Christine, thank you. I know what you've shared here today will be very, very useful to the parents who are listening and are really wanting to see their kids succeed. It starts with ourselves. We have to kind of build in success with ourselves to build in success with our family and our children. So all these things that you helped us with to understand a little more clearly was really helpful, and I applaud your efforts and what you do in the Dearborn District, and the hard work you've put in to help teachers become even more capable and enjoy what they do, because I do know that there's more and more coming from the state, more and more put on their plate, and nothing's being taken off, and people are really starting to get an overload kind of feeling. And so anything that we can do to help alleviate some of that pressure and put fun, we talked about math as fun, you know, fun back into classrooms. That's just everything. So I do want to tell our listeners once again, this is WHFR Dearborn, and this is a pre-recorded program. It's called Parent Connection, and you can hear us every fourth Monday of every month at 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, and there is an podcast on the website, so feel free to join us there as well. And if there's anything we can do to help meet your needs, please let us know. Give us a call at the station, and that number is, I think, Roger, you're gonna have to tell me that number real quickly. It's 827, is it? I should have had that down here first before I spoke this. But I do want you to also know that The number here is the 1-800 number, 585-HFCC, extension 9676. The studio phone is 313-845-9676. You can fax us at 313-317-4034 or email us at whfr@hfcc.edu. This is a pre-recorded program, and the views here and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the Henry Ford Community College. And thank you again for being with
us. Thank you, Margaret. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. I'm not sure what to do for 2 minutes. I guess I should thank my producer. You have something to say? Go ahead.
We had more.
Okay,
we had,
please.
For you.
This is WHFR Dearborn.
WHFR
89.3
WHFR
Dearborn
WHFR
.FM
WHFR
Making Waves
89.3 WHFR on your FM dial.
This is an official station of the MAEB. The Michigan Association of Educational Broadcasters was formed in 1977 to support your local high school and college radio stations. These stations serve the community and create alternative programming. But most importantly, they discover and train the next generation of broadcasters. For more information on the MAEB and its affiliates, visit www.maeb.org.
Are you looking for a real degree that's going to prepare you for the future? Then listen up. The Alternative Energy Technology degree is great for students looking to prepare themselves for a career in a new generation of green jobs. Students will learn about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
WHFR, Dearborn.
You ready?
Yes, sir!
We are Pack 547.
We are Pack 547!
From Redford, Michigan.
From Redford, Michigan!
We are proud of our city.
We are proud of our city!
We are at WHFR.
We are at WHFR!
And we're making waves.
Making waves!
Making waves!
Making waves!